And good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Meraz. Today, our guest is Dr. Tony Weaver. Let's do him on health matters here on the weekends on MSPR. And today, because it's spring, we'll talk about screenings. And Tony, I got mine up last weekend just in time for the advent of the summer weather. And I have a feeling, though, that's not what you wanted to talk about.
No, bugs are certainly a problem in the spring. There's some bugs in our screening system, and we screen for bugs. And it all kind of gets swirled up. But I'm talking about cancer screening, Chuck, actually.
You're talking about something a lot more serious, and I mean, screenings are very important.
Yeah, I've got three things that I wanted to mention. Screenings, first of all, one that's kind of gone, one that's in trouble, and one that's coming on. Now, I am not specifically talking about screening for colon cancer. There was exciting news from the American Cancer Society earlier this month that the rate of dying of colon cancer has dropped by about 30% over the past 10 years, a steady decline. So we're very happy with what we're doing for colon cancer. We need to do more of it. There's people that are not being screened. But the colon cancer screening works pretty well. Cervical cancer screening has done well, although we're learning more about the human papillomavirus and how we may be able to prevent it altogether with vaccination. But what we're talking about really is screening for some pretty common cancers in the state of Kentucky, prostate cancer, breast cancer, and then there's some new information on screening for lung cancer I really wanted to share with your listeners.
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about some of the other cancers, and then we'll talk about screenings for lung cancer next. As you mentioned, the good news about colon cancer, the instances of colon cancer down by 30%. The screenings have gotten a lot better over the years.
Yeah, colon cancer screening is interesting. Yeah, there are little nuances to screening that you have to appreciate. When we screen for colon cancer, we look for polyps. These are little finger-like projections out into the colon. They themselves are not cancers, but we feel they will turn into cancers. So one, when you screen, you look obviously for a colon cancer, but also you look for something that might become a colon cancer. So we're actually preventing the cancer by doing the screening. Now, you take, in the case of prostate cancer, breast cancer, or lung cancer, the best we can do is find the cancer after it's formed. But actually, in the case of colon cancer, we get to stop it beforehand.
Well, you talked about prostate and breast cancers. And the one thing I get the impression is, and we've talked about this a bit before on the program, is that there's some guesswork involved at times with this because the screenings at this point haven't been refined all the way to the point where you say, yes, here it is, or this is going to happen.
Yeah, we've become more sophisticated. Let's take prostate cancer, for example. Prostate cancer, it was a rite of passage. A man reached age 50, and up came the dreaded finger as well as the blood test for prostate cancer, and this was supposed to be done once a year, no questions asked. And we would find cancers by doing that. So what could possibly be wrong? We're finding cancers. We're cutting out cancers. This is exactly what we were supposed to be doing. Yet, prostate cancer screening is on a dramatic decline after the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. This is our expert group, our national expert group, said, you know, we can't see the benefit of this screening test. They ran the numbers, and I'll just give you the numbers on this. As best they can tell from looking at the scientific research, one man in 1,000, if you screen 1,000 people, you can save one person from dying from prostate cancer. Now, cure rates for prostate cancer are around 99%, five-year survival. It's not a cure, but it's a five-year survival. So in most cases, we can do things to either slow it down or to cure it altogether. Now, you take that one guy in 1,000 that's saved, 30 to 40 guys every 1,000 will develop erectile dysfunction, problems with being able to control their bladder. Two people will have a heart attack or some other serious event, and one person will die due to complications from the treatment for the prostate cancer. So you save one life from prostate cancer, you kill one person treating, and then you have these complications. So the numbers just simply didn't add up. Now, keep in mind, when we first came out with this is not people deceiving the public. We were trying to find cancers and pull out cancers. Well, we did that. The problem is, in the process of doing that, we're also caused complications. And so currently, according to the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, for routine screening for all men over age 50, they don't recommend it anymore.
What's interesting is, and I can remember this back, I think I was watching the Reds game on Father's Day last year, and they were talking about that, make sure you get checked for prostate cancer. And I mean, it's still, as of recently, that's just a year ago, people were talking about how important it is to get screened for prostate cancer or the potential of it.
Right. You find a cancer, you remove a cancer. This is all good stuff. And the other thing, see, is there are men today who are convinced someone pulled a cancer off my prostate, and I'm alive today, so I must have been cured of cancer by screening. So there is a powerful belief system that says this was a good thing. But you have to go back and look at the numbers. You know, you can't really look at this in terms of one person's success story, because obviously the person who died in surgery is not there to talk to you. The person who survives actually gives testimonials, but dead people don't testify. And so you don't hear the other side of it. So, you know, a lot of doctors stop screening altogether. Some still screen everybody over age 50. Some people look and they say, well, look, if you are an African-American, that's a higher risk thing. If you're a guy who had a father or brother develop prostate cancer or die of prostate cancer at a young age. Now, if your father died at age 101 of prostate cancer, God bless him, God bless you, that's not a risk factor. But a person like Frank Zappa died in their 50s of prostate cancer, then their sons, their brothers should get screened. And also, men can carry that BRCA1 and 2 gene as well, the one that causes breast cancer in women, and that ups their rate for prostate cancer. So you can screen higher risk people, but the general idea of screening all men over age 50 with a finger and with the blood test, the expert panels are now recommending we not do that, because the risk of the treatment actually outweigh the benefits of survival from prostate cancer.
Did I get this right the last time we talked about this issue, that oftentimes surgeries are done just based on indicators? In other words, indicators that this person possibly could have prostate cancer or
right.
may get it?
Well, let's take this, the PSA test. PSA is prostate-specific antigen. The prostate cells make this stuff. Cancers make a little bit more than the rest of the prostate. So if you have a little bit more than we think you should, then sometimes we'll schedule a biopsy to see if we can find cancer tissue. We've worked on that and worked on that. We tried to see, well, what if the prostate starts making a lot more? They call that PSA velocity. Maybe it made a lot more than it did a couple of years ago. That's a sign of a cancer. PSA density. Maybe for the size of your prostate, you're making too much. We tried all sorts of ways to modify the PSA test to make it a better discriminator, and we couldn't do it. So you're right. I mean, when we get a positive PSA test, the next step is to go to biopsy. Sometimes you may miss the cancer on biopsy. Sometimes you may pull something out that looks exactly like cancer under the microscope, but that thing's not going anywhere, not going to do anything. We'll go ahead and do an operation. A person's life is saved, or so we thought. And yet when we really follow people, we find those type of things, even in men who lived to a ripe old age and died of something else. They have these small areas of cells that look like cancer cells that just are just sitting there doing nothing. So we realize we're taking out a lot of material that was sitting in the prostate doing nothing, and we also caused some complications. The math just didn't add up.
All right, Tony, I kind of wrapped the prostate issue up with you in this sense. What should guys do if they're worried about being susceptible to prostate cancer or coming down with it?
Right. This is something you got to talk with your doctor about. If you have those risk factors, if you are the sort of person that you just really want to be aggressive about treating cancer, you're willing to take some risk, you have confidence in your medical team, and you want to go ahead with that, then that's your decision. It should be, though, an individual decision. The days when we put up billboards and we just frighten everybody into getting screening, I think those days are at least on their way out, if not already gone, for the case of PSA.
Now, breast cancer. Again, this is something that has become, the testing for breast cancer has been at times controversial.
Right. In Kentucky, we lose 392 people to prostate cancer every year, but breast cancer, we lose nearly 600. So the mortality rates are higher. Breast cancer has had a couple of very interesting developments actually in the past month, which is really one of the reasons I wanted to talk to your listeners about this. First of all, there was a big review in the AMA Journal. Two doctors, Lydia Pace, Nancy Keating from Brigham and Women's Hospital, looked at over 400 articles over 50 years, and they tried to put together a woman's risk of dying from breast cancer unscreened and the benefits of the screening. And they came up with some findings that were, I'll just say, they were controversial. First of all, they agree, and this is the number I've always heard, mammographic screening for breast cancer cuts the mortality rate by 20%. Okay, case closed. If you can cut your breast cancer rate, again, you got 600 people dying, you cut it by 20%, you have done something really good, right? I mean, there's just no way around that. The problem, again, comes up when we start looking at the harms. If you look at over a 10-year period of getting annual mammograms, over half the women are going to have a positive mammogram. Some of them they'll just repeat. Some of them they'll ultrasound, but there will be biopsies. The same thing as with the prostate. They pull out cells that look very much like cancer. They diagnose cancer. They treat cancer. But the estimates, and this is real fuzzy, the estimates are around 20% of the things they pull out on the mammogram were not going anywhere either. Now, that changes your equation rather dramatically. At that point, then, you've got people receiving unnecessary chemotherapy, unnecessary radiation therapy. So based on this, they recommended, just like with prostate cancer, they said, we're going to have to start talking to women individually about their risk. There are risk calculators on the internet. A woman can go, and based on certain lifestyle and other factors, can determine her risk of breast cancer and talk with her doctor about it. But once again, this recommendation, this is not from an official group, but this recommendation out of the AMA journal authors, they said, we're not sure that we should have universal mammographic screening. Now, Chuck, you remember back in 2009, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force just said, we don't think you should routinely screen in your 40s. Well, that was when we were developing the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and people just absolutely hit the roof. There were calls for disbanding of our Preventive Services Task Force panel. They had to apologize to a Senate investigation committee. But it turns out they had a point that especially for younger women in their 40s, there's a real downside to doing mammographic screening. Now, another thing that came out in the past month, this was in the New England Journal of Medicine, the Swiss Medical Board, this is their equivalent of a Preventive Services Task Force, they recommended that their country stop their screening mammogram services altogether.
Really?
They said it just doesn't pay off. Too many false positives, too many complications, and the overall benefits. Yes, you drop your mortality by 20%. That sounds like an absolute winner. But when you're giving chemotherapy to people who were not going to develop metastatic cancer and die from it, that's a pretty big harm.
So where do we go from here then?
Well, you know, I think where we're going to wind up is your first stop for screening is going to be a genetic test. You know, we have the ability to do a little bit better than simply lining up all of our men for their prostate tests, all their women for their mammograms, and saying at a certain age you go and you do this every year for so many years. We can actually determine a lot more about your risk of developing cancer. So I think out of all this mess is going to come that first stop. What is your risk, your actual genetic and environmental risk of developing cancer? Then we can determine an appropriate screening test for you. In the meantime, the next few years, it's going to be unsettled. You will hear conflicting recommendations, and I want your listeners to know that both the prostate cancer and the breast cancer screening tests have a definite downside. This is time to actually talk with your doctor about this because the automatic recommendations, I think, are going by the wayside. The risk of breast cancer does go up. If people in their 50s are more likely to develop breast cancer and die from it, and 60s more likely as well, the recommendations of the Preventive Services Task Force to abandon routine screening in the 40s, they are being supported by these reviews. But it is a very individual thing. And I'm telling my patients, you know, especially with the mammograms, the prostate tests it's a little bit more clear with them that the benefit is not great. With mammograms, if somebody just asked me right now, they said, well, what do you recommend? I said, well, yeah, I would recommend a woman get in the 50s get to, and 60s get to mammograms every year because we haven't got it sorted out. But change is coming. And I wanted your listeners to know there's a real science behind it.
It seems like with both sets of screenings, it's you get advice, and it's like the more you know, the less you know. And then things change, and I guess I would look at it and say, you know what? I have no idea what to do.
I think that's fair. I think, but I think that's better than marching in and getting a series of tests blindly. I don't want people to put faith where faith shouldn't be placed. Let's have uncertainty. And let's think things through and look at our risk and our approach to things and decide individually. It's a better way to go. Again, the expert recommendation still in 50s and 60s yearly mammograms, there is a question about the actual benefit of that, and it looks like the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force questioning routine mammograms. Now, if you've got a first-degree relative of breast cancer, you've got the BRCA1 or 2 gene, you had very late pregnancy and childbirth and breastfeeding, you had a long period of unopposed estrogen if you're a woman, then your risks are higher. But this is something you've got to talk to your doctor about. What are my risks? Look at these online risk calculators, figure out where it sorts out for you. It is not, it looks like we're going to, more and more, we're going to ask ourselves, are these tests really the way to go?
Sounds like it's no longer a one-size-fits-all situation.
Yes, it never was. We tried to make it that. I think we can do better.
Again, our guest today on Front Page is Dr. Tony Weaver. You hear him on the weekends here on his program, Health Matters. He's joining us today on the Front Page. I'm Chuck Mraz, your host. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Support for MSPR comes from Eat Gallery in historic downtown Maysville. Eat Gallery features original and unique gifts, including local artwork, fine jewelry, gemstones, sculptures, and natural art from around the world. Eat Gallery offers heirlooms, including earrings, bracelets, necklaces, and original artwork by Rob Weingartner and Fred Weisner. Open Tuesdays through Fridays, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eat Gallery in Maysville is online at eatgallery.com.
Welcome back to the Front Page again. Our guest is Dr. Tony Weaver as we talk about cancer screenings. And you mentioned lung cancer was the next topic of the day, and there's a lot of interesting news regarding lung cancer screenings.
Yeah, now this, you would be surprised. With all I've told you about breast cancer and prostate cancer screening, you could say, well, gee, cancer screening is in trouble. Let me just throw out an idea that we may be to the point where we can actually do some screening for lung cancer. Back in December, the end of December, after a long comment period, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force finally decided there was enough evidence. Now, keep in mind, they've recommended against routine prostate cancer screening. They recommended scaling down breast cancer screening and focusing on women over age 50. They decided there was enough evidence to recommend screening smokers ages 55 to 74 who have been smoking more than a pack a day for 30 years. They recommended screening them for lung cancer. It was based on a huge trial, 50,000 people followed for about 8 years, and they found a 20% drop in lung cancer mortality. Now, when you look at the state of Kentucky, we've got about 400 people dying every year of prostate cancer, about 600 due to breast cancer, 3,500 people in the state of Kentucky die every year due to lung cancer. If you drop that by 20%, you save 700 lives. That's the equivalent of curing breast cancer. That's how serious this is. This is absolutely huge. Biggest thing I have ever seen in screening for lung cancer for people in the state of Kentucky. Now, everything we talked about with mammograms is true. There will be false positives. As a matter of fact, about a quarter of the people that get screened with these CT scans every year in this study, about a quarter of them had a positive result. Some of them got follow-up x-rays, some of them got biopsies. But the bottom line was they dropped the mortality due to lung cancer by 20%. They dropped the overall mortality, the risk of dying of anything, by almost 7%. We've never done that with a screening program, but we were able to do that in this trial at university centers with lung cancer screening. Implementing it, huge mess. You know, we have already looked at, you remember the Marty Dreiser Cancer Project.
Mm-hmm.
We looked at in eastern Kentucky implementing it. We were able to replicate the results, but we missed a lot of cancers using local radiologists who were general purpose radiologists. This really requires specific expertise, and it's going to be a mess. But because the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommended for it, insurance will start paying for it in 2015.
Very interesting. And obviously, as we know, and most people know, that this state, this part of the state, has a big problem with smoking and also lung cancer.
Yeah. Kentucky's rate of lung cancer, every county in the state is higher than the national average. Overall, the state is about 60% higher. Our death rates are 60% higher than the national average. And there are places, specifically in eastern Kentucky, counties that have incidence rates double the national average. The way I told, we were talking to a group at University of Kentucky last Friday, and the way I told them is, look, if this works in Kentucky, again, we can save hundreds of lives every year. If it doesn't work in Kentucky, it's not going to work anywhere else, and we need to tell the world that. This is exactly the place to start the screening program. This is exactly the place to test it and prove it or disprove it. And so we've got a lot of work to do. What we can't do is just start x-raying people and biopsying people just like we did with the mammograms and the prostate test. We've got to be smarter this time around and learn from some of the problems we've had with previous screenings.
Well, Surgeon General, I think it was about 50 years ago, put warnings on the packs of cigarettes that they could cause cancer. And here we are 50 years later talking about a real issue with lung cancer in the state of Kentucky. And I'm just wondering, and I know that Kentucky has been a state that has been very good at growing tobacco over the years. Of course, that's lessened. But at the same time, why haven't Kentuckians maybe gotten the message here?
You know, it has really been difficult. I'm frustrated, obviously, with our legislature for not enacting a statewide smoking ban. We still have we don't have the lowest tax rates in the country anymore. Missouri has that, but we still have low tax rates. But I'll point out, Chuck, even if we stopped smoking in the state of Kentucky today, everyone in the state stopped, lung cancer would still be our leading cause of cancer death for the next 5 years. So, first of all, this is not to say that we should divert our attention from stopping smoking, which causes 90% of all lung cancers. It's just to say we have a backup problem here because people have been smoking. The other thing to keep in mind, this is addictive, and they were targeted. Age 12 and 13, the tobacco companies went after these people. And so the idea that they don't deserve a screening program because this is something they caused themselves, I just don't think that holds up. There's a lot of risk factors for cancer that we can modify, and I think that for whatever reason, we're losing 3,500 Kentuckians a year, and we owe them at least an effort to try to save them.
So you think Kentucky will hit this thing hard in terms of trying to get people screened?
Chuck, I hope so. There's several ways it could go. One, we do nothing. We're apathetic. We just decide we're not going to change our ways. Two, because insurance will pay, we suddenly develop these mobile screening programs where people are just taking a lot of money and getting out of town at dark. The third, which I hope, is we have an organized system where we can learn how to screen properly and learn from our mistakes before it gets out 10 years or 15 years and we start discovering things like we did about the other screenings.
Yeah, it sounds like, though, that could happen, that people are starting to become aware of this and realize that there's a different way to go about things.
Yeah. I think this one is one where we talked about risk factors for breast cancer, for prostate cancer. This is one where we know the risk factors pretty well, don't we? I mean, 90% in smoking, so we know who we ought to go for. We're not lining up all of our people ages 55 to 74 and saying, well, why don't we just check for lung cancer? We're lining up the ones that have the highest risk. Even within that group, we can go further. You know, the heavier smokers, the longer smokers, the ones who've had relatives who've had cancer or other types of cancer themselves, we know that they are at the very highest risk. And so we can start to, I think, to really piece through this and have an effective screening program. It's really going to be difficult.
I'm still curious about secondhand smoke in the sense that, obviously, if you've got a lot more smokers, you've got a lot more people who are exposed to secondhand smoke, and obviously they have a risk of developing lung cancer as well.
Yeah. Now, the thing about the screening is we are looking at the very highest risk. I think cigarettes are not one-way smoke producers. That is, no matter which end of the cigarette you're on, it's in your mouth or you're sitting across the table, you're going to get cigarette smoke. And it makes sense if it causes cancer going one way, it would cause cancer going the other way. So I'm saying I absolutely agree with you. Secondhand smoke, a very high risk for cancer. The problem is the risk is still because they don't actually put the cigarettes in their mouth. They're not constantly exposed. They don't have quite the risk of cancer. When you start x-raying people at lower risk, that's where we ran into problems with our other screening programs. So we got to start with the highest risk people, and that's the ones who put the cigarettes in their mouth. The rest of us really need to get away from smoke. If we're not addicted to it, we need to get it out of our restaurants and out of our public places, and that's where the legislature could have helped us out.
All right, time for a final thought.
Final thought. Cancer screening is changing. I believe it will be based more on genetics and risk and less on lining people up at a certain age and running tests on them. I'm very excited about what we're doing, but it will be complicated. It will not be as simple as we had 5 years ago.
Well, Tony, thanks as always for coming over.
You're welcome, Chuck.
Dr. Tony Weaver, our guest today on Front Page. Don't forget to listen to Tony on his program, Health Matters, this weekend here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm host of Front Page, Chuck Mraz. See you next time.